from your hostess with the mostest, Lauren Hines. This is I Did It My Way, the podcast that brings you into the story of leading entrepreneurs and tastemakers.
From an early appreciation of art, Lauren has developed a successful career utilizing her God-given gift to share her passion with many. As a young bride, Lauren took on several DIY projects and blogged tutorials along the way. After building a following, she began receiving requests to have items created for other brides. She soon decided to open her first online shop. Although this started as a hobby in the beginning years, she reached a point when she realized her potential and 1023 Designs was born. Thus began her path to creating her empire. Once she connected with her brand identity, she knew she wanted to produce unique elements for her custom event decor clients. Allowing her creativity to lead her, Lauren has set a standard in custom event decor. Lauren's work has been recognized in print publications such as Munaluchi Bride, the Celebration Society, formerly known as Occasions, O Brides Magazine, Women's Day, and other industry magazines, as well as online publications, including Hostess with the Mostess, Essence, People, Style Me Pretty, The Disney Blog, and countless others, having now been published well over 300 times. Lauren believes it is important that her products stand out as a representation of her brand, just as she believes that her clients' events should be a unique representation of their brand. Lauren does not identify herself as a product maker or a manufacturer. She is an artist who produces custom pieces that create emotions and memories.
Hello, everybody. I'm Lauren Hunt, your hostess for I Did It My Way. I'm super excited today to be welcoming a wonderful friend and a friend in the industry as well, Mrs. Lauren Sarnoff at Waters of 1023 Designs. Welcome, Lauren.
Hi. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I know between orders and fulfillment and shipping and even marketing, you've got your hands so full, but you've got an excellent team, and I'm just grateful that you're able to chat with our listeners today. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Mrs. 1023, the world has probably seen your work at some point. They may not have known it was your work, or they may have figured it out that it came from 1023. But I would love to, you know, just hear you talk a little bit more about the company before we dig into your story. Obviously, I Did It My Way is the story of leading entrepreneurs and tastemakers. It takes you into your journey a little bit. But I'd love for people to hear a little more about your wonderful brand and, you know, how you came up with it and everything.
So the brand itself, 1023 Designs, is actually my birthday, October 23rd. My favorite number is 23. It's one of those numbers that I see all the time, and a lot of things relate back to it.
Yes.
So I wanted to use that, and just doing the 1023, it just kind of came. It was very effortless, although my business went through maybe 6 to 8 different names before 1023, where I would pick a name and somebody would tell me, oh, this is my name, I just don't have it registered, or I bought the website, or I have an Etsy shop with this name. So I actually rolled through a lot of names. And then finally, this one, when I was just like, I want something original, it was effortless. It was just like, bam, bam, there it was. I did decide to do 1023 Designs. So no matter what I'm doing in my business, as long as it has something to do with design, it'll fit. And my business actually went through a lot of transitions where I used to do invitations. I used to do hand-painted aisle runners. I've gone through different things, but everything always fit under Designs.
Right.
And I left it like that because I know how I am and know that I might not stay doing one particular type of design work.
Yeah, that's cool. So you started out doing invitations. Is that how your business began?
Business actually began for my own wedding. When I got married, I did my own invitations, table numbers, my aisle runner, my card box, different decor, hand painted, so many like different little things.
Yeah.
It was definitely like a cutesy crafty DIY wedding.
I'm sure it was nice, though. I mean, I've seen some DIY crafty weddings online, you know, and they're nowhere near to what you would design them to be. I'm sure there was a journey, but, you know.
It was an adventure. And back then, I was actually a blogger. I blogged quite a bit back then. Mm-hmm. So I did start a new blog at that time that was like a wedding journey blog.
Uh-huh.
And I posted pictures, and I was getting orders from off of my blog.
Interesting.
So it just kind of started. And at one point in time, somebody ordered it was a hand-painted aisle runner, and they happened to be local. Mm-hmm. And when I went to pick it up, she was like, hey, you should have an Etsy shop. And I was like, okay. And I went home and I set up an Etsy shop. That's
Did
literally
you know how Etsy was at the time?
That was it.
Wow. What was that? Did you know what Etsy was at the time? Was it the first time?
Only kind of, sort of. Because I got married and I was looking up projects, I had stumbled upon it. Etsy definitely was not what it is now.
Right.
And it's grown a lot. It's gone through its own transitions, some good, some bad.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I had no idea it was going to turn into what it turned into and who was going to find me because of Etsy. Like some of my earlier, like Martha Stewart, that was found from Etsy. A couple other magazines, HGTV, that was from Etsy because they shop Etsy shops to look for things.
That's interesting.
Well, at that time.
Right, at that time. So now, I mean, obviously it's so much more of a crowded platform. What was it that made you go from the transition to Etsy to really just building out your storefront online?
It was actually some of the customers. I had a customer order something, and let's say it's in the description, you have to put the size, and it said like 2 feet wide. Mm-hmm. And when she got it, she says it's much smaller than I thought. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, 2 feet wide at my house is 2 feet wide at your house.
Right.
And she was like, well, I was thinking this was going to like cover this. And it was actually that moment where I was realized, and she left me a 1-star review, very upset. Mm-hmm. That how small the review was how small 2 feet is.
Oh gosh.
And unfortunately, you know, measurements for long before I was even born. But it was that moment where I was like, these people have a lot of control, and you are dealing with people where some appreciate handmade, which that's what it's for. There's some people who want something custom or personalized, but don't understand
what handmade
really is, the heart, the passion. This is not being manufactured in Mexico or China where, you know, it's mass produced. This is literally handmade to order. And it was that particular one that I was like, I really can't just rely on this because somebody can damage you because of that. And you know, now it's so much better and the people are more educated. You're always going to have people like that no matter what. But back then when it was a little newer, I don't think the consumers necessarily got just how precious and how special Etsy really is. Because Etsy, it's its own community of creative people who some have full-time jobs, some don't. Like, it's such an important thing. But back then it was just like a shopping site.
Right.
So it was that moment that pushed me out to do that. Mm-hmm. But so I'm glad it happened.
Right.
Yeah. But I love Etsy, you know, for the most part anyway. So I went right back.
Yeah. How did you handle that? Because I've heard you talk, we were at a couple planners conferences, the planners suite together. And I heard you actually do a talk on that, combating the negative. And that's something that people deal with a lot, you know, especially as you're talking about these platforms that you don't necessarily have control over unless you're paying them
right.
a whole lot or at a premium point monthly to be able to adjust those. How do you combat an organic negative review to get it either favorable, or what do you do in that process? How much time, space, and mind space do you give it, you know, and how do you-
I used to give it way too much mind space. I will say that I used to let these things bother me, hurt my feelings. I've put my, like, even Etsy shop on vacation mode before because I was so upset about a review or something somebody said. that's out of my control. For me, things that are in my control, if I make an error, I'm 100% okay with, because I can apologize for my error. I can fix an error, because errors are human. You know,
right.
It's natural. If you're working with the right clients that are for you, you can work through those type of things. But the things that, you know, you see people get upset about that have no control, whether it be to me, or even I've seen planners get slammed for things that are so far out of their control. And it's hard not to give it any mind space, because again, we're human, and
it's your craft. It's something that you've put your heart and your soul into.
Right.
It's very hard sometimes to separate that, because it's who your work is. A lot of times, as yourself, you're an artist. It's an essence of who you are.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So for me, although I tell myself don't give it any mind space, that's going to happen. But I know that. But I control it. Mm-hmm. So I know it's going to happen. I make ways for that. But my biggest thing is trying to make sure that I learn and get better from every single one. So I have this thing, and this is anything in my life, get bitter or get better. Mm. Like every single thing that happens in your life, you can pick one or the other. So even if it's things that are out of my control,
yeah,
I can still figure out a way to make it better. Or if it's really like 2 feet, you know, this 2 feet is too small, but like literally, like I don't even know if that came from Europe. Measurement.
Right.
Like, right. Yeah. But those
have you can laugh about it now, you know. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
But I can tell you I cried about it when that happened. But you know, you make it better. So you give a better description. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll write the feet, you know, the one little dash for the feet. Yeah. And then also in parentheses, write the word feet. And if I'm working with a client that I can tell is confused in size, I might even, you know, suggest go grab a ruler, go grab a tape measure, go to Home Depot, open up a tape measure, even if you don't want to buy one, look at it and make sure this is right for you. Because I run into that more often than one would think, especially when it is stuff like measurement. It's not a normal, like they learn measurement what, in second or third grade. And if you think about it, you don't really deal with measurement for the rest of your life unless you happen to be in an industry that calls for it.
No, you're so right. We take that for granted. Yeah, you're so right. Like we take that for granted in the events industry, but most people are not thinking about measurement.
Right. And I have planners who email me and they're like, I need a decal like the size of a tall Starbucks cup. The first time I got that, I promise you, I never even had Starbucks in my life at that time. But I dropped to Starbucks and asked them for a cup.
Did you get hooked after that?
Yeah. And I still don't drink coffee. I don't drink coffee, but I'm addicted to Starbucks and I don't drink coffee.
But espresso.
Their marketing, they got it. They're brilliant to look at. And actually, I'm revamping part of my internal part of my business.
Yeah.
Based upon something I saw at Starbucks the other day. Because one of the managers left their book on accident out on the counter, their manual. And while I was sitting there waiting, I was reading it.
That's a fail.
Yeah, because she had our notes in there. Like, she had our daily notes in there. But it was a great benefit to me that I actually went online to see if I can obtain a blank copy of their daily logging.
Right.
Because it was great. So I'm going to make my own.
Very cool.
Go figure.
That's great. Yeah.
But that probably came about because something had to have happened. You know, so bad things trigger good things. They trigger rules. They trigger regulations, procedures. We have procedures in place that make life awesome because something didn't happen.
Right.
No one would have ever come up with rules, laws, regulations if there was no need for them.
Yeah. And it might be boring to think about it, right, for business to create your standard operating procedures and all that. But that is how you add value to your company. It's how you can pass along a business system. It's what makes your business stand out as well. You know,
so right. And at the end of the day, if you have a if you have an exit plan that includes you selling your business, if you have, you can have, and we just saw this with a national online publication, like a digital publication, they have however many followers, they have beautiful content, But if you don't have every single thing you need in place, there's no value. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with your business. You can have a million followers. You can have great work. But if you leave, is it sellable? Because right. if you're what's making it valuable and you leave, it has no value. There's no, you can't hand it over to somebody without that SOP.
You're right. You're so right. I have to give a shout out to our one of our planners, financial planners, Smart Plan Investing. That's what they try to teach entrepreneurs, but we don't think about that sometimes until it's too late.
Yep.
And I wanted to go to something. You were talking earlier about the process of starting your business. And I always love to get the backstory behind there. So you're still DIY, blogger. But coming up, you're such an artist now. Do you take art school class? Were you in art school? Do you take classes? What were you doing when you were little? What was your dream then?
So art's been in my life for my entire life because life is art. So it all depends on your perception. Mm-hmm. And for me, now from the time I was a little girl, I always wanted to be an artist. I was always told art is not a career, it's a hobby.
Yeah.
So you get yourself in a really good career to where you can afford right. art supplies.
Right.
And I was taught that from year after year. Every time they asked me, what do I want to be? And I want to be an artist.
Yeah.
That was pretty much, you know, how it went. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember back when my grandmother was still living and I used to go to her house mm-hmm. and I don't know how young I was, but I can tell you, I used to watch like Barney. So it was that young.
Yeah, right.
It was like yeah. way back, Punky Barney Brewster. Was cool. Oh, no, before Punky Brewster even, I think. I don't know. But way back when, so I was like, we're talking little girl. But I used to, she didn't have toys at her house at all. And I used to go to her house almost every day. But she used to knit and crochet. Mm. And she had this box of buttons that she has collected forever. She lived in New York, so a lot of them were like straight out of like, what is it, Woolworths and
oh yeah,
old
throwback goodness,
awesome. Yes, like I have buttons that are still on the package from Woolworths, like from the companies that she didn't take them off the little white thing.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So I used to play with those, and I would make mosaics. Big giant mosaics on the ground.
Yeah.
Using all the different colors. And one day I'll show you this picture that I have. So when she passed and I inherited the button box, mm-hmm. I made a mosaic that I did like a Mod Podge and actually glued it to canvas.
Wow.
So have a full button. It's kind yeah. of cool. But so, I mean, just from forever. And I always like, I'm very visual, so I see everything in design. I think out everything in pictures in my head. Like we had that conversation about yeah. instructions.
Yeah.
You need a bunch of words.
I'm going to have that there. I'm going to have like a slideshow of sorts with instructions.
Yes.
New procedure. Yeah.
And I've just always been like that. I'm a very visual learner.
Yeah.
Even in school, when I had trouble in school with certain things, when it came to when teachers realized, okay, give it to me visually and I'm there, mm-hmm. I excelled very well. So mm-hmm. I've just always had that, the love, the appreciation. I still dream of one day sleeping on the floor in a museum. Mm. And just feeling art around you and knowing like some of this art was made like so long ago. It's mind blowing. Like people go in an art museum and they're like, oh, this is boring. But it's more than just the fact that, okay, it's a lady like draped over and there's grapes. Like think about how long ago this was painted and the tools that they had available to them.
Right.
And they created this with way less than what we have now.
Yeah. Like, what's your favorite painting?
Oh, Starry Nights.
Starry Nights.
Oh my gosh. Matter of fact,
it's an abstract. Is that Van Gogh?
Yes. He's such an amazing person. His creativity and where his mind was and to know. So he suffered from depression and had mental issues going on. Yeah. And among true creatives, that's actually very common, which a lot of people don't know that, or they hide it. Yeah. But it's a very common thing because we think very differently. Mm-hmm. And to me, having someone like him to look up to, that you can have those days and find the beauty in them, because mm-hmm. that's what Starry Nights was. That was painted out of the window of,
right, you know,
at that moment. Like, that's what he's going through. And yeah. so that is one of, that's such an important, it's not just that it, I think it's beautiful and there's so much to do with it. It's the meaning behind it and how that happened, because I have those days. Mm-hmm. And to be able to look, I connect with it so much.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. I don't know why I thought of that. When you talked about Starry Nights, my mind went to, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, because to be in your cage or in your mental box, or having grown in the process of trying to grow through the challenge, you can still sing, you can still paint, you can still be beautiful and do beautiful things. And even if it doesn't get the immediate attention of the world, it doesn't matter, because you were able to express that and it was your therapy, you know? And then later, people will catch on later, and it's okay if they don't, because you're able to grow through that with
the way of expressing. And to me, true art, art is defined in many different ways, and mm-hmm. art in our society is kind of, like, part of the art system is actually really screwed up in how art works in our society, because art in our society is dictated by wealthy people mm-hmm. who decide the value
right.
of a piece of art.
Yes.
But what art is to the artist and to us, it's an outlet. It's another day of living in some cases. It's being able to take out an emotion on a canvas or on a bottle or on a street or wherever you may have taken it out, because it was stuck in you and you don't necessarily have what somebody who is either verbal or, you know, this can take it out. Like that,
right?
Art, like every time you look at a piece of like actual like art, not a like commissioned pieces are a little different. But if you look at it and realize, like, I'm looking at something that may have saved a person's life. Like, somebody may have not done something drastic in their life. And not to say everybody's dark, but art is very expressive. It's very personal. It's very emotional. Some of the greatest pieces of art have never been seen.
That's true.
Any of my deep, deep paint, like, nothing has ever been seen, not even by my husband.
Mm.
It's me getting out something inside of me, and it's even comes with joy. You know, it's different. It's all different types of emotion. It's not just the dark, but some of the greatest pieces just happen to be painted by people who were dealing with things.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that's an amazing, that's how society was back then. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. How do you translate that? Because being an artist and then also taking on, what you do is a lot of custom work. You do a lot of requests that people have, but somehow letting your outlet still be there. How do you balance that?
It's very different. It's 100% is two different things. I'm very grateful for having 1023 Designs to allow me to be creative in general, because I have to be. Like it kills me inside not to do something creative. And that's even in cooking, or it's anything, like using your brain to create something.
Yes.
To me is life. Like that's my fuel.
Yes.
So doing, you know, the majority of my work is commissioned work. They kind of, I want this, I want this, I want that. I make it. Mm-hmm. Where it's just a blessing on a blessing would be my clients that trust the creative.
Yeah.
And they might tell me the theme, or the type of party, the date, the budget, mm-hmm. and just let me do.
Yeah.
And I have several of those clients that know how I am, know that they're not going to be let down.
Right.
And even though I only do like that many, and it's not like I do that with all my clients, because the majority of them are not necessarily like that. But even mm-hmm. having those really do, it makes this fun. Like I enjoy this. So I don't mind doing this, the repetitive stuff over and over and over again, because I know at the end of the month I'm going to do this.
Yes. Yeah.
And repetitive stuff also, like we're talking about SOPs, I can make a procedure on how to do it, and I can always have somebody else do it if I don't want to do it, since I really need to do new things.
Yeah.
So I did create a system for myself, knowing myself, that allows me to do that. And that's going back to where I have 1023 designs as my umbrella, because... Yes. If I really want to start doing oil paintings, 1023 Designs is going to start probably doing oil paintings, or it's going to be a company under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Because if that's what I need, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, right. It's how you're going to have sustainability in the industry, right? You can't do something for long if you don't love it. Now, let me ask you, you're such a creative, you're a strong creative, but you have processes, you have systems. How, look at the face. You know the question, right? In a world of being a creative or being the creative yourself or talking to creatives, how do you buckle down long enough to just create some systems?
So as much as I do try to put systems and whatnot in place, mine blow compared to how they should be. Bottom line.
Thank you for being honest. Yeah.
Bottom line, even compared to some, I may have like, wow, you have an order of operation for certain things, and it blows. It should be so much more detailed. It should be followed better. You know, I could say all these different things about it. Number one, as you can hear, I am aware. And to me, in everything in life, awareness is your number one. I know it's needed.
It's true.
It's important for me to write it down, even if I personally am not following it at all times. Yeah. So creatives might have a list of rules. Us following it is so hard, especially because you're always thinking of another way to do something.
Yes.
But that list of rules is so important, especially if I want to go take a week off and I need my assistant to take over for a week. I want her following those rules.
That's right.
You're not going to go rogue like I go. I can go rogue. You can't go rogue.
Right.
So when you take that type of stuff into consideration of how important they are.
Right.
I'm not going to always follow them.
Yeah.
But they are the rules nonetheless.
Right.
Like, and just knowing that to me is so important. Now, I do think just like if you're hiring me, I'm your creative. Mm-hmm. You're hiring me because you don't do what I do. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to trust me to do what I do. Right. In that same way, there are people who I'm specialized in doing, setting up procedures for companies. Mm-hmm. And who understand creatives and do it for creatives.
Yes. Bless them. They're wonderful.
Melton.
Yes.
Trust her. Like,
yeah,
that's what she does. She knows what she's doing. So I think, you know, mine are not in the greatest of shape, even though they are there. And once I kind of figure out where I'm going to go more, I will tell you right now, I'm hiring a professional to come and do all of my, like the uniform, the final thing of it, because I know how important it is.
Yeah.
And even though I'm creative, so I can 100% come up with it myself. There's no doubt in my mind that I can come up with my own manual. I can do it all myself. Right. I have full confidence,
right.
But I don't have time.
Yeah. There's a trade-off for everything. There is
yeah.
a trade-off. You have to know.
You have time or you have money. I rather use the money and save my time. Yeah. So
and create more revenue using that
right. time. But it's so important, especially yeah. for creatives though, because we go rogue. That's part of being creative. If you tell me that there's a creative who doesn't go rogue, I would question their creativity.
How creative are you, really? How committed are you to really being creative? It's so true.
It's one of the many.
You've got to have systems to keep you going, you know, in certain
but, right.
How
the smart ones get
how
those
do you
people?
Evaluate opportunities? I would love to find that out for you, because planners out there, before you call producers, before you call Lauren, just listen to this portion of her speak.
You know, when it comes to the value
yeah.
in any opportunity,
mm-hmm.
It's in the eyes of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like there's any true way to place value on it, because you might have something where I know I'm not getting a single thing back out of it.
Mm.
There's no tangible value. There's nothing. But let's say it was something that to this person, it's everything to them. Mm-hmm. It's their whole life. Right. And they really, not to say that they can't do it without you, but they really need you. Mm-hmm. It has a different type of value because, you know, if you're blessed with the opportunity to live your dream, mm-hmm. you really should understand the value of blessing somebody else to live their dream.
That's true.
And it kind of throws the word value out the window.
That's good.
It's hard too, because with what I do, there's so many, I get so many inquiries for opportunities. It's hard. Like, how do you say no? How do you say like yes to the SPCA who's doing a fundraiser, but you have to say no to the Boys and Girls Club, Pets versus Humans, because one you can technically squeeze in, this one you can't. And then it's like, if you really get technical with the word value, it's like, well, are you evaluating animals before humans? Well, absolutely not. But then wait, I'm not devaluing animals because I love animals. Like, it's such, it twists and it will like just mess up your mind if you really, if you focus on that word. Like, I think the word value has to come from your soul. It has to come from your heart. There's no, and the way that people are so quick to try to burn people at the stake these days and question, you know, why and how. And I have people who get upset with me when I tell them I can't do something, and they'll throw in the fact that I did something for somebody else.
Right.
Like, that still blows my mind because it's so petty, but it doesn't matter. That's our society right now.
Yeah. Make you bitter or better. Right. I like that saying, bitter or better.
Everything in life.
And unfortunately, a lot of those folks have chosen to take the bitter route as opposed to the latter, because that's usually out of an insecurity or some type of misplaced sense of expectation on you. That's really not anything that we have to hold to ourselves. And it's so loud, that both those voices can be so loud sometimes.
Yes.
And it's hard. It's easy to say it when we go through it, right? It's a challenge. But we have to be better for each other. Another one of your talks, you talk about even relationships with, vendors and how we work with each other. It's interesting, right? Because I think as someone who plans events for clients, and then you also have your vendor relationships with creatives and people who are the suppliers or creators like you who make the event, to be quite honest. You guys make the event what it is, and you sell the planner, you sell the planner's ability because you are that planner's, part of that planner's network. How do you maintain those relationships? What are some recommendations you have even for planners and how they work with their vendors or their suppliers too? Because there's a wide gamut of that.
So we'll touch base on this one. I think this can be an entire topic on its own, and it's such an important topic, and there's so many different areas that either need improvement or could have improvement.
Yeah.
But, you know, the one thing I think that is missed a lot is mutual respect. And we consider respect how we speak to each other. Mm-hmm. You speak to me respectfully, I speak to you respectfully. You know, you don't yell at me, I won't have to yell back at you. Mm-hmm. That's what most people can think about when they think of respect. But if you really take it to what respect is, would you want a bride to come to you on Wednesday saying that she wants a wedding on Sunday?
Right.
And she expects anything?
Yeah.
No, you would be like, this heifer does not respect me. What I do. She doesn't respect my work. She doesn't respect my, you know, my skill. No,
yeah. Yeah, but would you, that's
same thing with your planner to a vendor. Mm-hmm. Like, if you know, I know that they hate when brides make a change last minute.
Yep.
But if an order is being put in last minute,
mm-hmm.
it's that same thing. It mm-hmm. stops, especially vendors who have very, not necessarily that their schedule is completely full and booked, but it's very structured. Like, yes. Certain things have to be done on this day. Certain things have to be done on this day. you know, and you want to be done by 6 o'clock, but you're giving us a job that's going to take us an extra 4 hours. Well, that means we have to stay up until doing your work, maybe until 11 o'clock that night.
Right.
And it's that type of little things that are often forgotten because it does go on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And the majority of us will just, you know, smile and do it because we want to help make sure that you produce the best event that you possibly can.
Right.
That's like, for me as a vendor, it's very important that each of my planners are doing the best job at their event, even with these categories that don't involve me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a planner and I'm on your team and I'm doing your decor and you have like Billy Joe Bob being your DJ and he has bad equipment and bad this and bad that, and right. I'm worrying about your event, you know, I'm not necessarily going to bash the guy, but I'm going to say, hey, his equipment goes down all the time. Is there anything we could do to make sure, you know, and that's not my job. I'm not even at the event the day of, but if I know that, I want to like, hey, can maybe if I know somebody with other equipment, can we help this person? You know, it's those type of things that should be going through every vendor's mind. I don't like that saying, well, I use it a lot. I think it's funny. You have to be careful of when and how you use it. So one of my favorite sayings is, not my circus, not my monkeys.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
I heard that a long time ago.
Okay.
And, I don't
remember be careful how, what you say.
And I see it every blue moon at the perfect time. And it's basically like, let's say you're setting up an event.
Uh-huh.
And your chair people are putting all the chairs in the wrong place, or they're putting the pads on wrong, let's say, right?
Yeah, right.
And I'm there as the florist and I'm setting up my flowers and I'm like, oh, they're screwing that up again, or they're screwing that up. And I'm like, oh, but you know what? Not my circus, not my monkeys. I'm not worrying about it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to finish my florals. I'm going to do a great job on what I need to do. And then I'm going to leave.
And then we get out of here. Right.
So although I use that for myself sometimes, so I detach myself from certain things in my life where I need to stop trying to like save the world.
Yes.
At the same time, I think when it comes to weddings and events, uh-huh. people need to realize this is all of our circus.
It sure is.
We're all, you know, we're all the monkeys. Like,
you yeah. can look like a monkey real quick if you don't get your event together.
Right. We need to make sure that if we see somebody failing, it's yeah. not necessarily that we're like, people are quicker to bash somebody than to help somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any day of the week, you will see somebody talk about somebody before you see them reaching out to help them, to talk about the problem or talk about them, then right. talk to them about the problem.
Yeah.
Hands down. Like, no one can even deny that that's not the way that this has turned into.
Right.
So,
right. for sure.
I just feel like with that, you know, using, if we really took respect for what it was, it would be respecting each vendor, respecting this event, respect, you know, it's such a big ordeal. And there's all these little teeny tiny things. That's why I said it's going to be a huge conversation because there's so many little things. It's not just like, you know, it's not just like no rush orders. There's so much more. It's so much bigger. And it's really vital for our industry.
Mm-hmm.
Planners are needed because mistakes happened.
Right.
Errors happen.
Right.
So planners are needed. Yeah. If errors didn't happen, technically planners wouldn't really be needed. Because if I'm a bride and I never had to worry about anything wrong ever going on, I hire my DJ because he could do whatever. I would hire my florist because she knows what to do. I would hire this person because they know what to do. Mm-hmm. Why would I pay $5,000 to $20,000, whatever, for a planner if nothing can go wrong?
Yeah. And if you didn't have the knowledge, yeah. I mean, the bride's lessons just don't know the best place to start looking, what they need to ask, too. And,
right. Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, if there was no issues, no errors, no room for error, right. a planner wouldn't be needed.
Right.
Planners are so valuable.
Yeah.
Because of all of those things.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Planners yeah. are basically the glue. If you're making a cake, you have all your ingredients, but like you don't have the eggs to bind them.
Right.
You can put them in a pot, but you're going to have yeah. a bunch of nothing. You right. need something to bind. Your planners are literally the glue that binds. Like there's so much value in them, but when you like, put it on this little thing so you see how important they are, that how important they become. Now, turn your little pie this way. I'm so visual. Like, so here they
are. I love it. I love it. I'm loving all.
So all your little vendors are sitting on this little pie together. So turn it this way, and now you have your DJ. Now your DJ is going to be, we're going to spotlight, you know, why he's so important.
Right.
He's very important, entertainment, and I don't know everything that DJ, some DJs do a whole lot more than others, you know, but then you turn it again, and then you have this person, and suddenly all these people that you can spotlight on how valuable they are, you see how valuable all of them are. Like, it kills me when I see stuff where people cut out another vendor because they're like, I can do it myself. Now, some of them actually can do it themselves, but some of them are playing Russian roulette with somebody's event.
Absolutely.
To do it themselves, when really, everyone technically is very important.
And it's opened up a lot of doors for you too, Lauren, because I've got to bring this up because you've started out talking about this passion that you're asked, how are you going to even make a living doing that? And then what you do it so well, people notice that they start getting that, you get that attention, and then they make referrals. And then you start getting into some of these high net worth individuals who are calling on you to do big events for them, and even celebrity clients. So how has that changed the face of your business?
I will say this. Some of my biggest and OMG moments, clients and whatnot, are ones that no one will ever see, know about, or anything. One of my ongoing clients that is just amazingly supportive and provide me with endless amount of work. If I want work to do, I can contact them and say, like, hey, I had this idea, can you do it, kind of thing. And it kind of stays, no one knows about it.
So
those type, although I would love to, like, you know, post everything under the sun, what it does for me on the inside, I have, like, major that trust. And I have that respect, which, going back, that's how important respect, like, my clients really, you know, that's, like, awesome. So, you know, at one point in time, this company, when it was started, was basically to keep me occupied and keep me busy. When I was pregnant with my daughter, I got pushed out of my job. So that's when this started, actually. It started when I got pregnant, I got pushed out of my job. I was making things, and it was so, I had almost a nervous breakdown. Like, what am I, no one's going to hire a pregnant person. So it's to keep me busy. And then it started being able to afford grocery shopping. So then I was in charge of providing the grocery shopping, which felt great to me to be able to do that. And it just kept going and kept going, and doors opened to where my husband actually left his full-time job that had supported our family for all that time to come work with me full-time. So now we do this together, and we're expanding together. We have an expansion that's about to start, followed by another one that's already in the planning phases right behind that one.
Very awesome.
So it's pretty cool.
Beautiful.
And it's a blessing. It really is. So I do believe that doors open as you are ready for them, whether it be with clients or type of clients, type of work, you know, type of orders, whatever the case may be. So with all that being said, there are certain moments that I know were those, there's no words I can use to even express those moments. The first one was from LEB Events. This was so long ago. I could tell you exactly where I was. I was at the barber shop with my son getting his hair cut. My daughter, I believe, was in a infant carrier at the time. And she called, and first of all, I didn't know how she got my number. It was, like, surreal to me, because I wasn't really doing, I was doing wedding stuff, but not what I'm doing now. And I get a phone call, I'm like, hello? And she said, hi, this is Eliana from LEB Events. I don't know who I am, but I'm the bookmaker in Atlanta, and I'm just like, You know who she is. Right. And she was, right. Ellie was not who Ellie is now by any means, which is so awesome. It's just, and I, it's really cool that I saw her when she wasn't doing anything like what she's doing now. I worked with her before all of that.
Mentally, though, she knew where she was going.
I mean, whole time.
Right? It's always in our...
The whole time.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And she she told me about this project she was doing, and I was like, well, I haven't done anything like that. She's like, oh, you can totally do it. And I was like, no, that's a bit for me. You know, thank you. And she's like, no, you can do that. And yeah, you're good. And I'm just like, no.
That's awesome. It's awesome.
I'm kind of, you're going to do it. You're going to do great. Okay, I'm going to send you over the information.
Yeah.
And it ended up being an event for, it was a magazine event for industry professionals that used to be out at the time. And I went from, the most my work was really seen was Etsy. I got the most interest. I got the most, you know, people from Etsy for the most part. Right. To of a sudden, all these planners at one time.
Wow.
Just back to back contacting me for information. When I tell you that changed, it was like Super Mario. He, you know, hits the block. The mushroom comes and falls off. He grabs the mushroom and goes.
Right.
That's literally what took place. So that was definitely one of those moments.
Yeah.
Then, with the celebrity thing started rolling in, it was really aligning. You know, I made sure I aligned with good people, and of course, some people aren't good people.
Yeah.
But I aligned myself with people, with planners, and bakers who were good human beings.
This is part of your value to these opportunities. Who is the person you're aligning yourself to?
Like, I don't care if you do nothing but celebrity events. If you have negative vibes, I'm a big energy person. And I don't have to be around you to pick up on the type of person you are.
Right.
I won't work with them. Right. Yeah. I've actually cut off several planners and clients that I got a lot of business from. I made a lot of money from. Mm-hmm. And they might smile and people might love them and everything, but if they're not, that's so important to me. It affects you, who I am as a person, but it's in my work. Like, I'm giving you a piece of my art,
right?
A piece of me.
Mm-hmm.
Giving you a piece of me, I have to put it into the hands of somebody I know is a good person. And I know that's kind of, it might be like weird to some people, but that's my normal. That's how I feel. That's what's true to me. So I really aligned myself with people I felt were good human beings. And they attracted good clients. Mm-hmm. And some of those people who I worked with, who I cut off and I decided not to work with, they work with amazing clients.
Mm-hmm.
I still didn't... I'm not driven in that direction. I'd rather work with good humans. You know, good things come to them. Their cup runneth over.
That's right.
My cup runneth over and it runs into the next. I rather have that with the right people.
Yeah.
And that's really...
There's some folks, you don't want their downpour. I don't want what's coming from that cup. Yeah. You know, that cup may not be filled with some of the best juice, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want that overpour if it means that I'm going to be... not looking at my value system or not using my moral compass.
Right. And that's one thing that's so important to me to stay true, especially in this industry. And I said it before, the industry of love is not always filled with love. So it's really important to me, since that's what's in my heart and that's what I really, you know, hold important. I have to align myself that way. And it's worked out in my favor. Of course, I've missed some opportunities, which I try not to, you know, you never should focus on missed opportunity, especially when it was my choice. So there were certain things, you know, I might have eaten at me for a little minute. Like, should I have just dealt with it?
Yeah.
Is that they got so much attention. Oh my gosh. Like something that was on, but I felt how I felt.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm glad I went in my direction, but sometimes, especially when I see it on whatever on TV, like I see the episodes again, I'm just like, but I got to stay true to, you know, who I am. My heart, again, is my heart. And
you know, Lauren, you can look in the mirror at the end of the day, know you were true to who you are, who you were created to be, you know? And I think if we did that a little bit more in our industry of love, we'd have more love around us and more people willing to treat others better. More people willing to.
It's contagious.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about that because sometimes it is a trade-off, but at the end of the day, we can trade off for dollars, but at the end of the day, why sell your soul, right? And that's what a lot of people do every single day for the almighty, quote unquote, almighty dollar. And it's not worth it when you can't look at yourself tonight or even know who you are. And so right. I applaud you for being willing to do that time after time because you're faced it even at this point in your career.
At all times, at all point in times, you have to do that.
Well, Lauren, thank you again for just spending the time and sharing your heart and your wisdom and your awesomeness with us. I want to applaud you for being such a wonderful mom, entrepreneur, wife, and daughter of God, keeping everything beautifully in line. And I know it's a balancing act in our lives, but as long as we're balancing the right things, it's all good. And so thank you very much for spending your time. Gosh, and giving and pouring out so much with us today. And I look forward to chatting with you again really, really soon.
Thank you. Likewise.
Yeah. Thanks, Lauren. All righty. Thank you all, everyone, for joining us for this episode of I Did It My Way, the podcast that brings you into the journey of leading entrepreneurs and tastemakers. And thanks again. I'm Lauren Hines, and we hope you have a good time interacting with 1023 online. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We're only a quick step away. Anywhere at atlantawp.com or info@atlantawp.com. Thanks so much. Bye, Lauren.
Thank you for being a part of the magic with I Did It My Way. Visit us at www.atlantawp.com.